This is Consumed. I'm Scott Porch. On today's show, Alex Rickenbach, the director of the new Netflix original film, Ibiza. Rickenbach was a production assistant on Adam McKay and Will Ferrell's film, Step Brother. And then he spent several years directing at their Funny or Die digital studio. Ibiza is part gross-out comedy, part buddy comedy, part romantic comedy. And you can hear hints of all three in this scene on the beach near the beginning of the film.
So many different types of boobs and nips. I like baggy fingerprints. Bilbo Baggins, Little Bo Peeps, Honeydews, Riri's, Daniel Craig's. They're all just so beautiful, you know? Yo.
I'm at the beach. Where are you?
Hi, Khaleesi.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, girl.
Hi, this is Diego. He works for Disfrute, and he's so nice that I just told him that you guys tagged along.
Wow. You're cute.
Oh, thank you very much.
What? Oh, no.
Whoa.
Were you wearing sunscreen?
What, am I burned?
You're a little red.
No, let's not lie. You're a lot red.
Yeah, red lobster, baby.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Am I, like, gonna get sun poisoning?
The Spanish sun is so strong. But no worries. It will fade by this evening, and you will still look beautiful.
Oh.
Damn.
Just get yourself some aloe. Dip a washcloth in milk, dripping in on your supple body.
Thank you.
Diego.
I am Nikki.
Nice to meet you, Nikki.
Nice to meet you, too.
Well, Alex Rickenbach, I really appreciate you talking to me. I guess I wanted to start a little bit from Ibiza with kind of the really rough insult of Spain, that the implication that all of the rooms, the hotel rooms there, are covered in jizz. And I wanted to know maybe if you could talk about that first.
Yeah, well, yeah. That was our writer, Lauren Kahn. You know, I'm always amazed at, her ability to find moments like that. And I think that's something that, I don't want to speak for all the hotel rooms in Spain, but I think we're speaking a little bit for some hotel rooms in Spain that maybe she stayed in. That was such a fun scene to shoot, because I think it speaks a lot to, like, our collaborations, in that, like, you know, it's an idea that she had, and that her and I kind of just sat down and we were like, what is the most fun way to execute this joke that maybe keeps it unexpected and executes it in a way that feels really real to the character.
So set that up a little bit. You had a black light in a hotel room, and then they turned out the lights, and then all hell broke loose.
Yeah. That was one of those weird days on set where our lovely production design team, I just kept on saying, you know, more and more and more. And they were just like, it was one of those things that we pop the camera up and take a look, and it was like, man, it could take more. It seems like more will still be funnier. And I'm like, I'm normally like a little bit of a minimalist when it comes to comedy. Like, I like to keep things really natural and subtle, but this was one where it was like, man, the more that we sold it, the more real it felt to us. And it was really fun. And obviously Vanessa and Phoebe, they didn't have to like search too far. Once you saw the black light on that wall, they were so hilarious in the way that they played that.
So this falls a little bit into the category, there may be a better name for it in the business, but you hear it called gross out comedy, where there's like really big sight gags and sort of funny things like that happen. What are like the good movies like that that you think about when you know you're going to make something like that? Like, are you thinking about like Vacation and those kind of movies?
You know, yeah, you know, I mean, I think that like, McKay is a master of bouncing back and forth between these big gags and these really dialogue driven, funny jokes. Adam McKay, I thought a lot about Step Brothers as we were making this movie. I thought about, you know, of course you think about Bridesmaids and the wedding dress scene whenever you're doing a scene like that. You know, for us, when we started the movie, like we sort of looked at it and we were like, there are these big set piece comedies and these movies that are so funny and so huge. And then there are like these indie movies that we looked at a lot at, like everything from like Lost in Translation to Magic Mike XXL and these movies that have a slightly more indie tone and have like this really like kind of emotional and realistic feeling. And so we were sort of on this one trying to see like, could we do gags like that? Like the blacklight scene and like the bird shit scene in the limo and things like that. And then also create this kind of real emotional texture around that. And so, you know, we were constantly trying to blend those two tones.
I have in my notes, in fact, I was pulling this up when thinking about the cinematography of the movie. I have in my notes, romantic comedies usually have a shiny, overlit look, and this one feels more like John Hughes in HD.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, well, that's a lot of credit to that goes to our cinematographer, Danny Motor. And him and I worked really hard on that. And like I said, like we just kept on talking about, like, what is it about that blend? How do we blend those big movies like Step Brothers and The Hangover and Bridesmaids and stuff like that with maybe the more Sofia Coppola type approach or a Steven Soderbergh approach where you try to create that emotional texture? And I think that, like, for us, it was about how real can the movie feel and can we be totally sucked into it? And John Hughes is a great reference as well. You know, like, I think that there's something to some of those older movies and how realistically they were lit and shot. And you know, one of those older ones that we looked at was actually 10, the Blake Edwards Dudley Moore film, which I think probably has gotten lost a little bit in history, but it's like, everybody remembers it for Bo Derek running on the beach. But when I first saw it, I was like, oh, this is like kind of a, like a sad, funny movie about a midlife crisis. And so we looked at all those kinds of films that had those kind of real textures to them and tried to see, like, again, could we push that emotional journey while also making sure that the comedy was as big as it could be.
Well, let's start with Step Brothers. That's something I wanted to bring up anyway. If you look at your IMDb page, you see this blizzard of stuff that's mostly shorts. And if you get to the very bottom of it, you see that you were a PA on Step Brothers. And so I kind of wanted to, I mean, knowing that's an Adam McKay movie and that you've been at Funny or Die for all these years since, how did that happen that you were a PA on that movie?
Yeah, you know, when I moved to LA, I really didn't, you know, I maybe knew a couple of people that were like in school down here. So I didn't really have a game plan for how to get a job. And so they used to make this thing called like the Hollywood Production Guide, which is basically like a phone book of production companies. And I took my resume and like a reel of my short film. My resume was my college degree, basically. And I'd worked at like a radio station for a while. And I literally went around and drove around to every production company that had ever made a movie I liked and asked for a job. And when I showed up at Apatow Productions, they had moved offices. And I went up to this receptionist and I said, you know, I have a meeting with Judd Apatow, which was, you know, a clear lie. And they said, well, his office isn't here. Yeah. They said, his office isn't here anymore. And I said, oh my God, I'm going to be late. Do you have the forwarding address? And I think that like I pulled off the line enough that they gave me the forwarding address. So I drove over to the new office and they were quite literally, they were putting the door on the building. Oh my gosh. There was no door. And I walked in and went upstairs and there was one guy on a laptop answering the phone. And I said, hey, I'm looking for an assistant job. And he was like, oh, we're about to do this movie called Step Brothers. Do you want to call the production coordinator of that? And I did. And it took, they didn't need me at the time, but I just kind of, the guy was really nice. He was like, hey, check back in. And I just kind of kept checking back in every couple weeks. And one day I called and someone had just quit. So that I got the job and I got to go work on Step Brothers, and watching him work, was incredible. The amount of improv and the alts and kind of the way that he was managing that wild movie and making it something that, you know, I think became one of the most important comedy films of the last, you know, 20, 30 years.
You know, that movie is aging really well. I was surprised when I pulled it up that it only has a 51 on Metacritic score. And I was really surprised. I haven't gone back and looked at any of the individual reviews, but I've always remembered that as being a really, really funny movie.
Yeah, I think it was hard for people to wrap their head around at first. I mean, I think, I hope I'm not speaking out of school here, but I know that he thinks that it's like, you know, one of the best things that him and Will ever did together. Like he kind of, that's one of his favorites. Again, I hope I'm not too old school sharing that, but like, it's, I think, just such a special film. And so when I was working on that, I was like, well, I gotta stop being an assistant. I gotta start making stuff. I gotta figure this out. So I started taking UCB classes and trying to make short films, in LA. And, eventually I kind of got up the guts to make a little micro budget indie feature. And that is what kind of got me in at Funny or Die. And then I spent the next 5 years there just soaking up as much as I could and making as much as I could.
So how does the Funny or Die machine work? I mean, you mostly have the writers and directors who all work there. And so you're just matching up with each other just on one project after another? Or do you have a partner that you generally work with as a writer and director?
It's a total free for all. You've got writers and directors and producers and editors, and we were all just there just trying to make things. And if you could convince basically another person that it was worth making, normally you could get it made. And then sometimes, you know, we'd have these celebrities come in, and they would come in and for these meetings, and we'd pitch them ideas, or they would come and pitch us the things that they wanted to do. And that would, then you'd end up with these huge stars in your videos. And it was kind of this incredible thing where it's just like, it was pure, just like, if you had the ambition to keep getting stuff done and you could convince other people to make it, that you could. And then you got all this experience of working with these top level actors, you know, and I was 25 directing, you know, people that were, you know, like we had Jean Dujardin in a video I produced, like right as he was getting nominated for the Oscar. Like, it was just one of those things where you're like, man, he's about to win an Oscar probably. And he's here right now, you know, and that was where Lauren Kahn and I really found each other, is that she was writing stuff and I was directing and producing, and we started collaborating, and it just was like very easy.
And you actually get budget for those. I was there a couple of years ago for a story I wrote for BuzzFeed, and spent some time watching a short that Gerard Carmichael did that was set in a video store. He worked in a video store, and the room, it was like downstairs, kind of in the back of Funny or Die. The whole room was, you know, was dressed out as this video store. So, I mean, you've obviously got a little bit of time and money.
I think
to work
I directed
with.
That video.
Did you really?
I think so. You mean, was it a cell phone store?
Yeah, yeah, it was a cell phone store.
Yeah, that's
hilarious.
I did that.
Yeah, I
no
was
way.
There. You were, BuzzFeed was making a series for Snapchat that I was there. I was doing like a week. Like a story about a week in comedy and new media, and I was a series that Snapchat was, you were doing for Snapchat, where you would record it on Monday and then I think it would go up on Wednesday. And then at some point while I was there, somebody said, hey, you know, Gerard Carmichael is shooting this thing downstairs. Do you want to go watch for a little while? And so I went down there.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Watched him do takes on that. Well, tell me about that spot, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good place
sure.
to start for how a Funny or Die sketch works.
That was sort of near the end of my run there. And, you know, I was a big fan of Gerard. So I'm a big fan of Gerard. And he had this idea for a cell phone that had a camera that was specifically for recording police brutality. And, you know, that was something that was always a challenge there, and something that McKay was so good at kind of shepherding us all through, is to take on hard subjects and try to find a way to make a point, but still make them funny enough that they, you know, they could get an audience and be, you know, watchable. And so Gerard had this idea, and this great writer, Christine Nangle, who's gone on to write for a ton of great shows. And I think she's show running the President show right now. And she wrote it. And, that was one of those ones where, yeah, we did get a little extra budget for that. And I really fought for that because I felt like it needed to look like an AT&T commercial. Like, it needed to have that polish for us to have an entry point into this like cell phone salesman in a way that felt like watchable. You know, I think sometimes like the harder the topic, like the clearer the vision needs to be. So it was one of those things where, you know, Gerard's so sharp and Christine is so sharp. And I was just trying to kind of create an environment where we could tell that story and make those jokes land. And so, yeah, we got to build a little AT&T store on our tiny little stage there. And We really like tried to put some polish into it and really find the way into these like pretty tricky jokes.
So all of these videos are free on Funny or Die to watch. What is the business plan for those? Is that just marketing for the branded content and commercials and things you do? Or is there some way
I can't really speak to that too much. I know their business model's changed a lot since I've left. They do a lot of branded content, and now it's really heavily like a TV production company as well. But at the time, it was just sort of like the Wild West of the internet, you know? So it was just kind of like there was investment and there was branded budgets coming through, and there was, you know, venture capital and all that kind of stuff. And we just like, we were all just running with it. We were just trying to make as much good stuff as we could.
So you got to work with a lot of interesting people. I think Jeff Goldblum was, and Ed Begley were in one of the ones you did. Darcy Carden was in one of the ones you did.
Yeah, Darcy's the best.
Who else? Who's some of the other people?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, LK and I did a lot with Eliza Coop, who was a frequent collaborator of ours. I did a big parody with Darren Criss and Evan Rachel Wood that was one of my favorites. A lot of athletes, you know, I did like some stuff with Chris Bosch that I really enjoyed, and Baron Davis. You know, I did this like series for TNT with Baron Davis that was like fully improvised about him trying to come back to the NBA. He was somebody I loved working with. It was all over the map. I mean, we got to work with everybody, and it was such like that prepared me so much for leaving Funny or Die, just in that like, you can't really like be thrown into a scenario that you didn't see at some point in your 5 years of Funny or Die, you know?
So you left and did what? Started on this film?
I left actually because I was developing another movie with Adam McKay that ended up not getting made. And in the interim, I started doing commercials, and I did like a lot of stuff. There was like a series that I did called Undercover Lift that was like a completely improvised like hitting camera show where like athletes and musicians would like drive lift cars in disguise. I did that for like a year off and on as I was developing this movie with McKay. And then in the middle of trying to get this other movie made, Ibiza came around and Lauren Kahn called me and was like, "Hey, this movie's going to get made." I'd always loved the script. And she was like, "This movie's going to get made. Do you want to direct it?" And I jumped at the opportunity.
So you directed one indie feature with probably not much of a budget, and then a lot of these shorts where sometimes you had decent budget. What was your skill set going into a movie where you were going to have good actors, a decent budget? What were you ready for and not ready for when it was time to do that?
Yeah, well, you know, luckily, like I said, the variety of stuff is like, all these shoots are typically 1 or 2 day things. So the thing that like is so different about Ibiza is that we were going everywhere from like there was days where, because I wanted things to feel really real, that I would just take the camera and the cast and the sound team away from everybody else and go and shoot certain things. So there was days where it felt very much like shooting in a micro budget indie. And then there's days in the clubs where you have, you know, literally 1,000 extras in the music plane and the cranes and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that stuff feels more like some of the bigger scale things I had done. So it was sort of allowing myself to be open and just like not kind of, it sounds kind of corny, but it's like just trying to be open and not like judge any of the different skill sets or any of the different like types of videos I had done and see if what I could have taken from any of those that could apply to this, like the Lift Undercover series that I did, where I'm like, you know, I've got like a earpiece in Shaquille O'Neal's ear and I'm, you know, feeding him jokes as he's talking to someone who doesn't know who they're talking to. Like that was as helpful as something where I'm shooting like a Michael Bay trailer parody, you know, like they're all like skill sets that were helpful on the movie.
Did you do auditions for the movie? Did you kind of know who you wanted with casting as you sat down and started looking at what kind of people should be involved?
Yeah, it was sort of a mix of everything. Gillian was the first one in, and that was huge for everyone and for the movie. I think that like once we had Gillian, you sort of knew like this was a movie that you could follow that lead actor and go on an emotional journey with them, and that she's got kind of that incredible straight person ability to carry the heart of the film and and also kind of like be your quarterback on set, where she knows where everyone's supposed to be and what the joke is and how to set it up and where and how to land it, you know. So when it's her joke, she takes it, and when it's somebody else's joke, she sets them up for it and gives them the right reaction.
And that's Gillian. That's Gillian Jacobs, who had been on Love for 3 seasons yeah. on Netflix.
Yeah, and you know, that was like a that was an easy one. My good friend Megan Gans had written for her on Community for years, and she was just like, you have to work with her. You're gonna love it. So when we got Gillian in, that was sort of like that set the tone. And then Vanessa was somebody that like I was so always blown away by like her comedic talent, and hadn't seen her play kind of like a real character over a full storyline like this, you know, like across a full film. And so, you know, she became very important in terms of like, I just felt like she would run with this character so well. And she joined on soon after. And then, Phoebe was somebody that I had like been like aware of, had, you know, thought she was really funny and met with her a couple times and was kind of so blown away by how funny she was and how easy she was to talk to that it became sort of like a mission to like put these three together. And when we got the three of them together for like a chemistry read, you immediately knew like that was the movie that you wanted to make. And then we did some auditions for some of like the, you know, especially for like the Spanish actors who I was less familiar with. We did some auditions with them. I prefer, other than that, I prefer meetings. You know, I think that like you can watch people's footage and you know what they, you know, what their kind of like style is as an actor, what they're capable of. I like to talk to them and get to know them and see like, is there something, you know, cause I do so much improv and we have so many alts and all that kind of stuff in the film. You kind of want to know who's this person when the camera is off and can we like bring that to the screen?
Well,
and
got,
so that
I've
becomes
a,
more important. For
I've
them.
Got a great marketing pitch for you. If it's not too late to do this before the movie comes out, have you seen those, yeah. you've seen those soundboards that like for prank calls where you can hit a button yes. and it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. You need to do that. One of those with all of Michaela Watkins's insults from this movie.
You're going to think I'm lying to you, but I actually did pitch this to the Netflix market.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious. Yeah. Cause I there was like a Kanye West board a few years ago online that I loved. And I was like, we have to do this for our movie.
She's great. Yeah, I'll have to grab
I'm gonna
some
bring
clips.
It back up to them after this phone call.
I'll have to grab some clips from the movie to put into the podcast. But
I made this executive decision very early on in my marriage. I was like, honey, you're not really father material. So he got a donor. I got a surrogate. Anyway, long story. We have perfect babies.
I mean, I love her and everything. I've interviewed her for Playboy before, wow. and she's one of my favorite
so good.
Actors working, going all the way back to what was the show that she did on ABC with Bradley Whitford and where she played.
Oh,
like,
I can't.
The Dippy.
I can't remember the title of that. I can't remember the title, but that's a good example
trophy
of somebody
wife.
Again
trophy
who I met
wife. Yeah.
who I met at Fun right, Trophy Wife. Yeah. That's another good example of somebody who I met at Funny or Die. We did a video about the final episode of the Serial podcast, the first season of Serial, and she came in and was just incredible and we loved working together. And so, you know, like that was another bonus of like, here's a person who like I got to work with at Funny or Die, and then she shows up in Europe and she's only like there for a week with us. And, but we already had a rapport and it was like, she was so brilliant. I thought in everything she did in the movie.
One of the movies that this reminded me a lot of in a really good way is Doug Liman's Go. Is that a movie you had seen or thought much about before you started on this?
You know, what's funny is that actually, a number of people on the film did bring up Go to me, and it's sort of a blind spot for me. I don't know the film Go, but I think like many people my age, like Swingers was something that was very important to me, and I had like really studied the special features on Swingers and how Doug had made that. And I always think about it, no matter what the budget is. I always think about some of the like pieces of advice he had on making that movie, and the way in which like his mentality on that film was like, this will be a feature film because it's 90 minutes. So we don't have to prove to everybody that we're a movie. And I think that when you're trying to set a tone for your film, it's so important to think about that and not try to like prove that you're a movie, but just be a movie. So long-winded answer to sort of to sort of say like that, no, I'm not familiar with Go, but his work was like an influence on the film.
Well, he uses music extremely well in sort of set piece style, like montages. And I think that's something that's really great about Ibiza is the music scenes. I mean, you had a great soundtrack. Did you get like an enormous budget for that, or is like Netflix on like a meal plan or something where you can use it?
I can't speak too much to the budget, but I will say that we did not go over budget on the movie, and that we were like very clever in how we budgeted the film so that we were using the money in the right places. And that was something where our producers were really great at working with me in terms of like, you know, I said early on that I felt like this needed to have a lot more music than we were like planning on when I came on board, and that I was willing to sort of like work around and figure out what we could do within the budget to put more money towards music. And a lot of those songs, we had incredible music supervisors in Dave Jordan and Trigger Tovin, who they do all the Marvel movies, and they're just, they're brilliant. And they worked with me a lot to find, you know, I wasn't really into EDM when I signed on to the movie. And so they worked really hard with me to send me tons of music and figure out what my tastes were in that space and find a way to do that, while also working with me to figure out how to get some of these other songs that I'd always kind of had in my head for the film. Like, you know, I'd always wanted to open the film on New York, New York, and kind of subvert that a little bit. And I wanted to have David Bowie in the film. And there was, you know, there was a number of different tracks that I sort of like had in mind. And they were just amazing at figuring it out.
This is a movie that is not bogged down by the sort of stresses and concerns of the world, even in, you know, you're in Western Europe with Brexit and all this fighting near Barcelona and all this that's going on. And so the movie is kind of this getaway from reality, which I kind of like. I think a lot of artists, filmmakers, writers have, you know, I think decided there's two paths for dealing with this sort of fucked up stuff that's going on the last couple of years, is that you can either lean into it and react to it and parody it or whatever, or you can just say, you know what, there's more out there to put in your brain and to entertain yourself than making some comment about Donald Trump. And I'm looking for that. I mean, I'm looking for things like that. And so I think that may have been one of the things about Ibiza that, you know, that hit me in the right place, is it's like, it felt like a 1950s, you know, sex comedy, or it had that airiness that wasn't constantly trying to remind me what's happening in the world.
Yeah, you know, that was I had done a lot of political satire at Funny or Die, and I think there's like a super important place for all of that, and this movie felt like an opportunity to sort of be the like I always saw like our three main characters as the world that like I want to be in, as opposed to the world that we are in. And like they're in the real world, and we show little glimpses of that in New York, and we sort of see like the difficulty of the real world and little glimpses. But I wanted this to be 90 minutes where you could just have fun. And I think I feel like a lot of like the whole cast brought this, but especially within our three leads, to see three people that you want to spend time with, and that you like, that's like the kind of people that like I want to hang out with, and like the world that I want to be in is like whatever world they're in, you know? So it was like, it was intentional to just say like, the world isn't necessarily great, but you know, for a couple of days, like having some laughs isn't like the end of the world, you know?
Well, and it was interesting, you know, I'm watching the movie, and I'm watching it on my computer because it's on Netflix's little screener thing that TV writers use. So it wasn't on my big TV. So I'm able to stop, poke around and see who an actor is. And like, you get this EDM, you know, DJ with the accent, and you stop and look and scroll through the credits, and it's like fuck, that's Robb Stark from Game of Thrones. Oh my God. Yeah, of course that's who it is. And then when you go back to the movie, it's like, that's Robb Stark. That's Robb Stark. That's Robb Stark. That's the only thing I could think about going back to it. did you have that reaction to him of like, this is like
I've now watched Game of Thrones, but I watched it while we were editing the movie. I was a late start to it, and my wife and our friends would have these Game of Thrones like watch parties that I was behind, and so I wasn't like checking in to it. So I didn't really know much about him as Robb Stark. And so I went and I watched some of his episodes from those early seasons before we cast him, and I was like, oh, this guy's incredible. And, you know, I interviewed we had like a little Skype meeting while I was already in Europe, and I was just so taken with him right away. And I had, you know, like, I like to watch like the cast on late night shows. I like to see like who they are when they're just like, when there's no script and they're just joking around. And I just was like, between that and our meeting, I was like, oh, this guy is full of charisma and he's so sweet and he's such a talented actor. Like, I was like, I know that he can do this. And, you know, like, he doesn't normally get to act with his Scottish accent. And I was like, just very excited to like be able to show him in a different way than people were familiar with. And he's just so gifted. Like, he just took to it right away. You know, like he came in and was shooting like the day that he arrived, basically. There was like no rehearsal process with him. And I think like the fact that he's so natural in the film and him and Gillian are so great together. I mean, it's really like such a skill.
Is it giving too much away to talk about the meet cute, or is that something that people should see as it happens?
Oh, I think that's okay. Why not? I mean,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about
how
it. Yeah.
Hilarious. So to go back to the blacklight thing, you kind of did a similar deal with Gillian Jacobs and how they met. Was that in the script? I mean, I didn't know that was a thing that you could draw on your body and it would show up in these blacklight type things that you see in EDM clubs.
That was something that Lauren Kahn came up with. And I think was one of those things, you know, like, You can sort of tell, like, you know, Lauren is, had a lot of films in development at the studios over the years. And it's like those kind of really catchy, funny, like bold ideas that just like make the script stand out right away. And then, you know, you take Gillian and Richard and they're so great at making it natural and making it feel real. But yeah, it was just one of those things where like, it was such a funny idea to have a DJ see this person out in the crowd because someone has, you know, drawn a dick on her face in blacklight and no one else knows it. You know, no one else has been able to see it until this moment. But I also like one of my favorite performances of the movie is that guy who draws it on her face. He was so funny in the way that he does that. And it was like, you know, he is so non-threatening and just so kind of like sweet about it. And then that little surprise of what it was like, he was just like that off camera too. He was just like this really sweet kid who was like very, like took it very seriously and was like, so much fun to play with. But yeah, I mean, it was just sort of like one of those, like we actively were wanting to make a rom-com and make it, different than other rom-coms. And that was one of those things where like, well, here's a meet cute that's not making it into your normal rom-com.
So the movie is about, and I don't know at what point in the film I would have said this because the Richard Madden stuff comes, I don't know, maybe a third of the way into the film, but I think the movie is about the ache of love at first sight and not having that person around. Is there a more eloquent way to put that? How would you say that?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing about the film. I think that like the whole film to me was always about like the more like serious undertone under all this comedy was about picking your head up and living your life and like not being afraid of like chasing what you really want, even if like it feels like the world doesn't want, like you shouldn't live a fun life, you know? And it was something that was like very important to me to like, to see that and to also to feel that like relationship. My wife and I started long distance and so I sort of, you know, very much understood that feeling of like you meet this person and you go, oh, that's right. And then everything stands in your way towards being together. And I think that there's like something very valuable in like, in exploring those like harder choices in life.
My wife and I did too. We met on a blind date, and then we didn't live in the same place at the time and started dating long. And it reminded me a lot of that, of not being in the same place and not being able to, you can't compartmentalize that. It's just in your, it's just,
yeah,
it's your life.
It's a bone deep feeling, you know, and you just, and I thought that was something that was so important in, with Richard playing Leo, you know, when we see that he, you know, I don't want to give away too much, but when we see how he feels about the whole situation too, you immediately know it's real for both of them. And I think that that was something that really mattered.
I think it was nice to see Gillian too, after these self-sabotaging characters that she tends to play, to play something aspirational, to play something like, you know, upper middle class person with a great job in New York gets to go on her first business trip to Europe. That's not who she usually plays.
Yeah. I mean, I just think she's such a brilliant actor. And, you know, I mean, I think that like, I feel like this character is very close to who she is in comparison. Like, I mean, I think she's such a brilliant actor that like, you know, you watch her play Mickey on Love and all these other characters, and she's just so believable in all of them. And I think that Harper in this movie is very close to like who she is as a person. And I've been so impressed by her ability to dive into this movie. And she was such a collaborator with us on finding ways to tell that story and to create a character that did feel new to her. And for me, like a character that felt new to this genre, you know, like this is a new person for me. And that is so exciting. I think that there's something so cool about watching someone discover something as opposed to people doing what you like are comfortable with. And she was always discovering on this film. And I think that's why she's so interesting to watch.
I love Vanessa Bayer. I think a lot of times in these movies, the comic relief character or the really funny character is the one who's over the top or a super asshole who keeps stepping in.
Right.
But with Vanessa Bayer, she's much more internal. She's like the weird kid sort of character in this movie. How do you do that when you're directing those scenes that are pretty internal, but also like she gets something on her face at one point in the movie and it's really, really funny, but it's not big. It's not like Melissa McCarthy shitting in the sink. It's a smaller performance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it starts off by just kind of listening and watching. Like I asked everybody to come out 2 weeks before we started shooting so that we could spend a lot of time together and rehearse as much as we could. So we would we'd start every day in this like conference room at our hotel, just playing with scenes in the script and tossing out ideas and improvising. And that's Gillian, Vanessa, Phoebe, Lauren Kahn, and myself. And we're all just sitting there playing. And then when that would finish, then LK and I would go and we would start rewriting to their voices. And so we really tried to put everybody in a position to be the most, like to play to everybody's strengths, because it's such a funny group and they're so funny as real people that you just wanted to show that off. So it's a lot of like listening and kind of paying attention to what they bring that is so funny. And with Vanessa, there's just so much, she has so much talent and it is so internal and it's so true to who she is that like part of the trick is just doing it enough. We do a lot of takes. We're always rolling the camera. We're always rolling two cameras actually. And you're just trying to capture all of it and take note of when something special happens, you know, and my editor, Josh Salzberg, who I've worked with for a long time, who I, you know, him, Lauren Kahn, and I all met on Step Brothers. We were all assistants on Step Brothers. He's so comfortable with that kind of footage and just going through it and help and finding all those little moments, you know, and obviously Vanessa gives you more than enough to play with.
So what's next? Are you going to do another movie?
Yeah, I hope so. I think like we really just finished this one up. So I've started, you know, Gillian and I have been talking about a project to kind of follow up with. I would like to work with the whole cast again. And I think it's just sort of figuring out what it is. I think that we
like a sequel or like a theater company doing another project.
I think, you know, like I think we're all open to both versions of that. And it's just sort of figuring out what that script is and what that idea is. So, I'm starting to write, and I know Lauren Kahn is starting to write, and we're all just starting to figure out kind of what the next thing for each of us is going to be and how we can each work together again too. But my hope is to kind of in the next few months get going on another film.
Well, I really appreciate you talking to me. I think this is a fun film and kind of a touching film too. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I appreciate you talking to me.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Well, I could talk to you for hours. This is a blast.